It's Friday, March 11th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melvin in Washington. Coming up today, we'll focus on politics and religion.
Islam. Large portions want to use very, very harsh means.
U.S. presidential hopeful Donald Trump last night. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone is here to talk about it. Then we head to Chicago, where a candidate of the Muslim faith is seeking office.
My state has not respected or responded to the needs of my community.
Kane Farabaugh has that story, and International Edition's Pete Heinlein talks with a reporter now in Iran, talking about how the Iranians are reacting to what many see as a new chapter in Iran-U.S. relations. It's all related. But we do start with U.S. politics, radical Islam, foreign policy, trade, all among a range of issues tackled in a mostly civil discourse by the last four Republican presidential candidates in their final debate before next Tuesday's key primary and caucus contest. In a lengthy discussion of the threat posed by radicalized Muslims, U.S. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump stood behind his claim that a lot of Muslims hate Americans and said he would consider sending up to 30,000 U.S. ground troops to fight Islamic State militants in the Middle East. Trump was questioned about a statement he had made in an interview this week that Islam hates us. When asked during the debate whether he was referring to all Muslims, Trump replied, "I mean a lot of them."
You can say what you want, and you can be politically correct if you want. I don't want to be so politically correct. I like to solve problems. We have a serious, serious problem of hate. There is tremendous hate. There is tremendous hate. We're large portions of a group of people. Islam, large portions want to use very, very harsh means. Now, let me go a step further. Women are treated horribly. You know that. You do know that. Women are treated horribly, and other things are happening that are very, very bad. Now, I will say this. There is tremendous hatred. The question was asked, what do you think? And I said, there is hatred. Now, it'd be very easy for me to say something differently, and everybody would say, oh, isn't that wonderful?
Mr. Trump,
We better solve the problem before it's too late.
Rival Marco Rubio replied sharply to Trump's words.
I'm not interested in being politically correct. I'm interested in being correct. And in order to be correct on this issue, here's the bottom line. We do work. There is Islam. Islam has a major problem on its hands. It has a significant percentage of its adherents, particularly in the Sunni faith, but also in the Shia, who have been radicalized and are willing to fly planes into a building and kill innocent people. There is no doubt about that. It is also true that if you look around the world at the challenges we face, we are going to have to work together with Muslims who are not radicals. We're going to have to work with the Jordanian kingdom. We're going to have to work with the Saudis. We're going to have to work with the Gulf kingdoms. We're going to have to work with the Egyptians to defeat, for example, ISIS. It will take a Sunni Arab movement to defeat them. And so I think you can be correct without needing to be politically correct. We are going to have to work with people in the Muslim faith, even as Islam itself faces a serious crisis within it
radicalization. Senator. Governor.
By the way, we should tell you that cowbell sound would just means that their time had been up. Now, joining us in the studio is VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Jim, this seems to be one of the more divisive issues, however you want to pronounce it, among the Republican candidates. Is this an issue as we move closer to the party conventions? And if so, how big of an issue?
Well, it will be an issue in the Republican primary battle. It will also be, I would think, a major issue in the general election campaign once we get the Democratic nominee against the Republican. You know, what we didn't hear in that exchange, and I watched it last night as well, recalling that Trump wants to ban, Muslims from coming into the country, he hasn't backed off of that. So these statements are going to be there for his Republican rivals to take him on. Now, whether they're going to have any impact, we don't know. Trump has been able to sort of fend off these attacks before. And the other thing we notice about this debate, the tone was a lot different. It was a lot gentler. They've decided not to go the attack route. The two previous debates were pretty tough on that. So for now, they're sort of standing down, and I think that's primarily because Trump is deciding he's ahead, and he doesn't want to take as many risks.
I just really would like to know, I don't know whether we can ascertain this or not, as to whether some kind of order came out from the Republican National Committee that said, whoa, guys, take it easy.
Well, if it came from the Republican National Committee, you can bet he probably wouldn't follow that.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
In fact, you know, he was endorsed today by Ben Carson. And now he's calling on basically that group, the Republican establishment, to get behind him. But what we're seeing here is there is still resistance. So we're in the throes right now of a party trying to sort out where it's headed. And we still don't know if his path to the nomination will be clear. We'll know a lot more Tuesday when five large states vote. And this could really tell the tale.
You have your job cut out for you over the next few months, don't you?
Yeah, it's been fun, though, and we'll continue to watch it.
VOA National Correspondent Jim Malone. Let's stay on the topic of politics, shall we? Much of the attention in the Illinois primary election set for March 15th focuses on the candidates trying to win the party's presidential nomination. But one Chicago community organizer and businessman who also is on the ballot is hoping to make history in the state. VOA's Kane Farabaugh has more from Chicago.
The Illinois General Assembly's 40th District on Chicago's northwest side is the place Paul Sack calls home, even if he doesn't like the way he sees politics working locally.
Supposedly, we have thousands of politicians representing us at the, you know, the city and county and state level and other districts, but really there's only a few guys that are in charge.
But a knock on the door to his apartment last year gave him new hope.
This campaigner told me a little bit about him. He seemed like he believed in the same things I believed in. And with the state and the mess that it's in, it seemed like it was the right time for me to get involved with something.
So on March 15th, Sack's top choice for the General Assembly is a Muslim American immigrant who has never before held public office. Harish Patel bills himself as an independent Democrat, someone who isn't beholden to the state party.
My state has not respected or responded to the needs of my community. So in this district, I just feel like there's a crisis of democracy.
When Patel came to the U.S. in 1999 with his widowed mother, he didn't speak any English.
And state assembly, what we do is we make laws for the state of Illinois.
But thanks to public programs, he got an education and a college degree. Now he wants to give back.
All of this is possible because of the investment that the community has made in me. And now it's sort of my time to figure out how to keep those programs so when other people are coming to this neighborhood, other people that live in this neighborhood, that built this neighborhood, have the access, same access that I got.
Chicago's 40th is one of the most ethnically diverse in the state. It is also home to three mosques and a large population of Muslim Americans. The primary is a two-man race between Patel and incumbent Jaime Andrade. Whoever wins is likely to win the general election in November because there is currently no Republican challenger. If Patel wins, he would make history as the first Muslim American immigrant elected to the Illinois General Assembly, something Paul Sack hopes to witness not just as a voter, but as a new member of Patel's campaign.
It is great that somebody who's from another country, somebody who didn't learn English until he was 14, is might be my representative.
Winning the election may be the easy part. The General Assembly next year will face many issues, including how to solve the state's $9 billion annual budget deficit. Kane Farabaugh, VOA News, Chicago, Illinois.
Joining us now, as he does every week, is Andrew Palcheski, our social media guru on International Edition. What's going on? What is trending? What is hot? That's the question I have to ask you because they told me to do that.
Well, it seems every day Donald Trump is trending for one reason or another. With those comments last night and some of the comments he's made about Islam, a lot of people accusing him of Islamophobia on social media. His supporters, however, saying, no, this is an actual problem that he's calling out. But interestingly, this big endorsement today from Ben Carson, Dr. Ben Carson, who was a former presidential candidate himself, has kind of shifted the conversation. So a lot of people talking about that endorsement on both sides. Some people, just some of the funny comments saying, of course, because Trump needs a brain surgeon. So maybe not a very positive comment for Donald Trump. So they're saying maybe Ben Carson will have a calming effect on him. Ben Carson's known for being very kind of stoic and some would say boring, but say might be a good balance with Donald Trump. Another's asking, what is he going to get in return? Nothing comes for free. So if Ben Carson's endorsing him, he's got to maybe get something. And Donald Trump alluded to maybe making him education secretary if he is elected president. So interesting politics behind the scenes at play there. But
he could get into being congressional brain surgeon, but we probably don't want to go there. Yeah.
They could probably a lot of people in Washington could use a checkup from the neck up, as they say.
But, I would think so. What did happen? As you said, it's Friday. What about on the light side?
Something on the light side. It's still politics. The state dinner last night for Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Hashtag state dinner trending. A lot of behind the scenes pictures. A lot of the celebrities that were there tweeting out pictures, including Sandra Oh, Ryan Reynolds. Ryan Reynolds had a picture of him with Prime Minister Trudeau and said, I was pitching him my idea of taking back Alaska. Ryan Reynolds, of course, the famous Canadian actor. And it was also Sasha and Malia's first state dinner. So a lot of people talking about that, saying they looked like they were having a lot of fun. I tweeted out a short time ago and said, if you're seated between Sandra Oh and Saturday Night Live producer Lorne Michaels, as Malia was, how can you not have a good time? Pretty good place to sit for your first state dinner.
For sure. Andrew Palcheski, International Editions, social media guru. And this is VOA.
Here's science in a minute.
The launch of NASA's InSight, or Interior Exploration, using seismic investigations, geodesy, and heat transport, has been rescheduled for May 2018, with a Mars touchdown to take place the following November. Its launch had been scheduled for this month, but had to be scrubbed after it was determined that a leak in the prime instrument of the spacecraft science payload could not be repaired on time. Specific planetary alignments that are needed for a launch to Mars occur every 26 months and last for only a couple of weeks. So, since the InSight was unable to make its March 2015 window, the next chance for launch wasn't until May 2018. Scientists hope InSight will provide some evidence about the formation and evolution of all rocky planets, including our own. Unlike Curiosity and other Mars rovers such as Spirit and Opportunity, the InSight lander will remain in a fixed position throughout its mission. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. The chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee told VOA that missile launches by Iran are sparking stronger resolve in Congress to renew and boost U.S. sanctions on Tehran. Republican Senator Bob Corker said he's working to extend the Iran Sanctions Act, which was suspended as part of last year's landmark international nuclear accord with Tehran. The law targets international investment in Iran. President Obama has stated repeatedly that sanctions will snap back if Iran violates the nuclear accord. International Edition's Pete Heinlein wanted to get a look inside of Iran.
I'm speaking to journalist Vivian Walt, who's on assignment in Tehran for Fortune magazine. And she's been, for the last several days, Vivian, you've been speaking to people, just average people, on the streets of Tehran, in salons and parlors and different places. And I'd like to ask you, what are people really thinking about, talking about, as they move into what everyone hopes will be a new era?
I have indeed spoken to many, many people. I've been here a week now. And, you know, you say that everybody hopes there will be a new era. But, you know, much like America, this is somewhat of a divided country. Although the elections that took place a couple of weeks ago showed huge support for reform and for change, there are plenty of people you meet who are deeply, deeply suspicious of the kind of détente with the West, and are not too sure whether or not they can trust it.
What is it that makes America so distrustful? Is it our political leadership? Is it the fact that they don't know from one administration to another what the policy is going to be? What do you think it's about?
Well, it's on different levels. For example, this morning it's Friday, so it's a holiday in the Muslim world. This morning, I was in the shrine for Imam Khomeini, the founding father of the Islamic Revolution, the Islamic Republic, and there were many people there who had come to pay their respects, to pray, and speaking to some young people, they said, you know, we like the fact that we're going to be more open to the West, and but we don't trust America, and it's very deep, and it's historic, and this goes back to the revolution, and way back before the revolution, when America was perceived to have simply dominated the economy, In the minds of many Iranians, they saw the American oil companies in particular as having come into the country and, drilled for oil and essentially expatriated all the profits without benefits to many Iranians themselves. So that is the perception of America, and people are deeply concerned that this might happen again.
Well, maybe this has something to do with, or maybe we can tie it into the missile tests that have been going on. It seems that they're really pushing the envelope a little bit with these missile tests that some say violate the nuclear agreement it reached with the United States. Iran denies that, but why do you think they're doing that? Is this something to say we're back? Is this a statement to the world?
I would think that more than it being a statement to the world, I think it's even more so a statement to some very powerful segments of the society inside Iran. You're talking about conservative clerics, the Revolutionary Guards, who wield an enormous amount of influence in this country economically and politically, and many really powerful segments of Iran who are not in favor of the era of peace and love with the West, and who feel that they want to make a statement that they have a powerful military, and a military that could also target Israel, which still remains a source of enmity very strongly in this country.
International Edition's Pete Heinlein talking with freelance reporter Vivian Walt in Tehran. This is International Edition.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Batty, host of your breakfast show, Daybreak Africa. As always, our newsroom is on top of the news of your interest. We provide you with up-to-the-minute news about Africa as well as world news. Tune in to our show right here on VOA Africa, your trusted source of news and information.
VOA News.
VOA. When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information. This is International Edition from the Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Let's journey to New York, where Jill Malandrino, our financial correspondent, is standing by at the VOA studios there. Jill, a lot of positive earnings surprises from U.S. companies, at least at the start, helped stocks go higher this morning. What's happened since then?
Well, really, what the catalyst has been is that we're seeing quite a rally in crude oil, which is such a big component of the energy sector. That's what the energy stocks move on, is based on the price of crude, and we've seen a recovery. We've seen almost a 50%, what they call a retracement in crude oil prices since the January low. So that's really what is lending to the powerful move we've seen in the S&P 500. Another big factor is the European Central Bank yesterday lowered interest rates. So there's some speculation going into next week when we have the Federal Reserve interest rate decision on Wednesday, which is probably one of the most important trading days of the year, that Chairman Yellen is not going to take up rates, and potentially we could see some more quantitative easing on our side. There's a number of central banks making this decision next week, and that's really what is supplying the underlying bid into the market. Earnings, for the most part, are done for this season till we get into the April reporting for Q2. The big ones next week to watch, FedEx is probably your biggest one. Other than that, there's really not much out there on the earnings front. Everything's going to be predicated on what Yellen does on Wednesday, and just a lot of macroeconomic data that we have to look forward to.
Jill, I don't want to catch you off guard, but sure. is there anything that leads to this all of a sudden rise in oil prices?
You know what? Fundamentally, nothing has changed. The global producers, whether it's OPEC or non-OPEC, they haven't cut down on production. And in fact, we're producing at record levels. I think what we're seeing in oil right now could potentially be stabilization in prices, if anything. And from a trading perspective, I would say it's more of a technical trade, sort of what we're seeing on the charts more so than the fundamentals, because nothing has changed there in terms of supply and demand. So what you're looking at right now is a classic technical trade, more of the prices that you're seeing on the charts versus supply and demand improving.
I think most of us want to know, maybe, you know, not in the financial world, but what is this going to mean, as, if anything, as far as pump prices are concerned?
Well, we have seen an increase in prices at the pump around the country. So as crude oil moves higher, that is certainly going to impact prices. And we're starting to see it a bit now. We are at very low levels. But once you start getting crude to go back to $50, $60, which will probably not happen in 2016, that's when prices at the pump start getting to that $2, $3 level.
Jill, I greatly appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week, okay?
Thank you.
Jill Malandrino, VOA's financial correspondent from the VOA studios in New York. And that's going to wrap things up for today for International Edition. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Ira Melman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States and Pakistan continue to share a fundamental desire for stability, peace, and regional and global economic development. The U.S.-Pakistan strategic dialogue provides an opportunity for both countries to find common ground on these issues in spite of past differences. In welcoming remarks, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry reaffirmed the United States and Pakistan's commitment to combating terrorism and protecting the people of both countries. The U.S. supports Pakistan's whole-of-government approach to eliminate the ability of militant groups to recruit, finance, and to incite violence. On regional security, both countries will continue efforts to promote stability and defeat those who foment extremism and violence. Cooperation along Pakistan's border remains critical, said Secretary Kerry. Pakistan's military is engaged in ongoing missions in North Waziristan to clear out extremists, and the U.S. has pledged $250 million to help rebuild the communities of persons who have been displaced by the fighting in these operations. With regard to nonproliferation, the U.S. encourages Pakistan to follow the U.S.-Russia example of seeking to reduce its number of nuclear warheads. Economic and development issues were also discussed at the U.S.-Pakistan dialogue. The two countries have a joint plan to expand trade over 5 years in a way that will help make Pakistan's markets more attractive to foreign investors. As part of this, the U.S. is going to partner with Pakistan to expand women's participation in the workplace. A reliable power grid is critical to Pakistan's economic development. That's why the U.S. is helping Pakistan develop a more stable, sustainable, and market-based energy sector. Today, the U.S. has added 1,750 megawatts to the country's electric grid, benefiting nearly 26 million Pakistanis. And through the new U.S.-Pakistan Clean Energy Partnership, it may be possible to add another 3,000 megawatts from clean energy sources. Finally, critical to Pakistan's long-term success is cooperation with the U.S. in education, science, and technology. As Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif stated during his visit here last October, a close and enduring partnership between Pakistan and the U.S. is a strategic imperative for achieving lasting peace and stability in our region and beyond.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.